97.1 FM.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and their guests, and not of Blue Sky Broadcasting.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the program. I am so glad that you are with us today because you're going to be blessed with this upcoming conversation. One of my favorite guests is here again, our self-described bird nerd, Mike Turnlin. Mike, thanks for being with us today. I appreciate it. You know, we're going to be talking about birds that spend the winter with us here in our North Idaho areas and how we can help them with shelter, food, and water, and maybe even more importantly, how we cannot interfere with them and interfere with their natural ways and how they want to go about their winter life. So settle in with us with a warm cup of tea or a cup of soup, and Professor Turnlin will be right back.
Hello, this is Nevin Neal, pastor of Bonners Ferry Baptist Church. In John chapter 15, verse 13, the Lord Jesus says, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." So the greatest love a man can show for his friend is to lay down his life for him. But in Romans chapter 5, verses 8 through 10, the Bible says, "But God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more than being now justified by his blood, we should be saved from wrath through him. For if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his Son, much more being reconciled, we should be saved by his life." The greatest love man can show is to lay down his life for a friend. But the love of God is even greater, in that Jesus Christ laid down his life for his enemies, for you and for me. Friend, I hope today you'll take heed to how great the love of God is and turn to Jesus Christ for salvation if you have not. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us at 267-3746.
Bi-Mart's biggest sale of the year starts today. You'll find Black Friday pricing store-wide on everything you need this holiday season. Get a Magnavox 65-inch 4K Roku TV for $469.99. Rustler men's straight-leg jeans are just $9.88. Plus, save on small appliances, holiday decor, and more. Save with Black Friday pricing now at Bi-Mart. Our latest savings book is in your mailbox and posted online at Bi-Mart.com. Employee-owned. Real value every day.
The fighting spirit of the Marine Corps is born of battles won. Battles won within, over enemies of fear, enemies of doubt. It's who we are. It's what we do. It's a promise made to you for more than two centuries. A promise of the Marines.
Thank you for the food.
Thanks for the turkey.
Thanks for the ham.
Thanks for the mashed potatoes.
Thank you for the peas.
Thank you for whatever those are.
At about the same time on the same day each year, families everywhere sit down together to say thanks for whatever it is they're so fortunate to have. Thanks for a meal. Thanks for each other. Thanks for our time together. During this special time of thanks, let's all remember to give a little something to someone else who needs it. Lend a hand. Provide a meal. Give a gift. Offer a kind word. Whatever it is you can do with whatever it is you have. Because part of how we can express our thanks is through giving in return. From all of us at Yolks Fresh Markets, thank you.
97.1 FM, 1400 KSPT, and 1450 KBFI.
All right, everyone, here we go. Before we get to Mike Turnlin, I want to remind you one more time that our current Bonner County Treasurer, Cheryl Peel, is retiring in January. What a great job she's been doing for Bonner County citizens. And so her position at Bonner County is opening up, and you can apply. I'm telling you, the minimum qualifications are pretty easy. U.S. citizen, 18 years old, oh my goodness, only 30 days residency in Bonner County, and a registered voter. But the professional responsibilities that they're looking for is a much higher bar. But you can get that application by Googling Bonner County Republican Central Committee. They're the ones that have those applications. And listen to this. The due date for your application is December the 3rd. So if you think you've got the skill set and you're interested in that, then I encourage you to put in your application with the Bonner County Republican Central Committee. All right. Say hello, everyone, with me, and welcome Mike Turnland back to the Speak Up table. Mike, thanks.
Well, thank you. It's a delight to be here.
You know, I had a guy on just last week. His name was Mike, and his last name was Birdsong. And I thought of you through the whole show. I thought, you know, that needs to be your last name. And Mike Birdsong need to hook up.
I like that. Yeah, we ought to. And Mike's a very masculine name, too.
It is. Everybody likes Michael. Mike. Okay, the first topic that we want to get to was one that you talked to me about, and I was so glad that you did, and that's about the birds that are only here in winter, and they are our winter birds. So get us started.
Yeah, we think of our summer residents who come in and breed. You know, they build a nest, raise a family, and then they go south. But we also have birds that come down here for the winter. This is where they go for the winter. And they're not hard to find, and they're not hard to bring to your house. Or if you want to, you can go out driving and take a gander and try to find them. And we could look at some of those. So what should I start with? The ones that we would see from our house or from our car?
I'm leaving it up to the professor here.
Well, I tell you what.
They're both good.
Yeah, they're both good. So, you know, this is low-impact bird watching. So if you have a great view of your feeder, you don't have to do a whole lot of things. If we have a La Nina winter like we're supposed to, that means Canada is going to get a lot of snow. And that means a lot of those tundra birds are going to come down even further south. Now, some of those are fairly common here. For example, we have the junco. The junco is that little, we have an Oregon junco. That's that fellow with the black cape and the brown body and the white belly. And they like to feed on the ground underneath your feeder. Keep an eye out. All of a sudden, flocking with those Oregon juncos, you'll see some slate-colored juncos. And just as the name suggests, they're slate-colored, and they're pretty. The female is a little bit more brown, but the male is a definite slate-colored, and they're solid. And they're a junco, so they have the dark eyes and the pink bill and the little white outside feathers on their tail, and they'll be flocking with their cousins, the Oregon junco. So that's the first one to keep an eye out for. Another one that is a little bit more surprising, and you're going to have to do a little bit more thinking, and that is the American tree sparrow. And the chipping sparrow is its cousin. They look very similar. And the chipping sparrow is a common bird in the summer, and it has that rusty cap with a little white stripe above the eye and then a black stripe through the eye, a little sparrow. And then they go south in the winter. What replaces them is their cousin, the American tree sparrow. It looks almost like the chipping sparrow. It has a rusty cap. But what's different about it is you look at its breast. It's white, whitish, off-white in its belly. There'll be a spot in the middle of it, right where the heart is. In fact, it's almost a heart-shaped little spot. So what looks like a chipping sparrow isn't a chipping sparrow. It's the American tree sparrow, and it's kind of a misnamed bird because it actually lives up in the, it spends its summers in the tundra up in Canada, and it does not nest in trees, and it doesn't roost in trees. It doesn't do anything in trees. It's a ground-dwelling bird.
You know, Mike, I have a quick question. See, you talk about chipping sparrows and tree sparrows. I look down at my notes, and I have the word sparrows.
It's
for me, it's all one big group. But a question about the eating, because it's both the juncos I was reading and the sparrows. They like their food like kind of down on the ground or down low to the ground. So, A, you're nodding, yes, that's true. Well, how if you want to feed these little guys, I mean, how do you keep the chipmunks and the squirrels away or what? How do we feed those low down guys?
That's true. You know, that juncos are a sparrow. And but because of coloration and tradition, you know, they have their own names and but they are a sparrow. And so it's like the song sparrow, which is my favorite bird, and it's a year-round resident, and it also feeds on the ground. So, yeah, I don't know what to do. I don't have a problem with the squirrels and whatnot.
Just put out enough for both?
Yeah, well, what I do is I just scatter food on the snow. Actually, I don't need to. And that might be maybe a little bit later in the show I can talk about how I did that.
Okay.
Another bird, a couple other birds that you can keep an eye out for, if it really gets cold, look for the common redpoll. Now, these are another sparrow-like bird. They love to feed on the ground. And they're kind of mostly white. They look like a white bird, but they
even
do have brown
highlights.
Even though
they're red, they're called red. Did you say
they're
called
pole? A redpoll. That means red cap. So they have a little beret on top that's red. Kind of like an American goldfinch has that little black beret on the forward part of his forehead. These have a red one.
I love it.
And they're mostly a Canadian bird, but they do come down if the snow is pretty heavy up there. And I don't see them every year, but I see them frequently enough to keep an eye out for them. So the common redpoll will show up. Okay, you want to go for a ride. What birds can you see? Well, look for the rough-legged hawk. This is a common winter resident. It's here every winter. And all you have to do is hop in your car and drive north on Highway 95 past Pondre and start looking at the big hawks that you see on the foam poles or in some of the trees. Go around Coburn Cove and some of those off-roads. And over any open field, you might see this big brown hawk, and you might think, "Oh, that's a red-tailed hawk." It's not. It's a cousin. They're both budios, but this one is a little bit different. In fact, if you look at it carefully, you'll think, "My goodness, that hawk doesn't have a beak. That's a beakless hawk," and it's kind of odd looking. And so you stop with your car and you glance at it with your binoculars, and you notice it does have a beak. But it's very small beak, and it also has very small feet, and that's the rough-legged hawk. And it spends its winters down here, perched on foam poles or prominent places where it can keep an eye on a cow pasture or a field, because they feed mostly on small rodents like voles and field mice.
How is it that they develop no beak and small feet? I mean, that to me is
well, I guess it's an adaptation for Arctic conditions.
Ah,
they have a small beak. They have a beak, but
yes,
it doesn't stick out like a red-tailed hawk.
Yeah.
And you won't notice the small feet, but they have little talons, and they're called rough-legged hawks because their legs are covered with feathers, which is unusual.
Warm,
exactly. Keep them warm, and they also love it if it's blustery out. They will soar into the wind and kind of hover there like a northern harrier will, and pounce down on their prey when it comes out. So that's actually a quite common bird to see, is a rough-legged hawk. So don't confuse it with a red tail. Stop and take a peek. And if you stay in your car, they tend to not be bothered by you watching them. And then another little, it's actually not a raptor, a shrike. A northern shrike.
I've never even heard of that.
Oh, a shrike. Oh, shrikes are strange birds. They're actually a songbird. They're a passerine, but they think they're a hawk. So they prey on other little birds, and they prey on voles and mice and what have you. And in the summer, they'll prey on large insects. And
So we've got birds. We just touched on a few that I'm going to get back to what they all eat. But like the juncos and the sparrows, they like their seeds and mm-hmm. their nuts and things. But these guys are carnivores. They're going to eat mice. And so the bigger birds, the hawk-like birds are, and even the fishing birds.
Yeah, so like
they eat meat.
Right. Actually, in the summer, everybody eats meat. Everybody eats bugs. And they turn to, with some exceptions, they turn to, when the bugs are gone, like our year-round residents, then they'll turn to seeds or dried fruit, shriveled up cherries, whatnot, mountain ash berries. But they're omnivores. But the raptors, like the rough-legged hawk, of course, they're strictly predatory. And they'll take small birds and they'll take rodents. The shrike is about the size of a jay. And it's, you'll see it sitting there. I noticed them, honestly, go out on a beautiful January day or December and there's snow on the ground and it's sunny out and it's a perfect day for a drive. Go out, again, go out in the Sully Valley and look on those telephone lines overlooking a field again. Right in the middle of the telephone line, you'll see this bird. And it'll be grayish, blackish, about the size of a jay. And if you get closer, you'll notice that it has a bandit's mask and an oversized head. That's a shrike. Now, shrike are famous. Most people think of the loggerhead. We don't get loggerhead here. We get them elsewhere in the country, and I've seen my share of them. They're famous for putting together what's called a larder. A male shrike will capture mice and birds and big grasshoppers and hang them on thorns and barbed wire fences and whatnot to show a prospective mate what a good provider he is.
Oh, my goodness.
And so she'll come and check out what's available for dinner.
And they mate in the wintertime?
No, they wait until spring. They wait until spring.
But he's like wooing her.
He is.
With his winter food supply.
That's the loggerhead. That's what they're famous for. We get the northern shrike comes down here in the winter, and there's no mating going on. They're just trying to get through the winter so they can get back up north, get back into the way of the family business. But they're predatory songbirds, and they're kind of cool. They are shy. So if you drive slowly and see one, don't get out of your car. At least I've never had any luck. So you just get in a position where you can park and watch them.
And give us the name of that bird again.
Northern shrike.
The northern shrike.
Yeah, look it up in your bird book.
Okay.
Beautiful birds. And they're strange because they are a songbird that thinks it's a hawk. And so now you're driving along and you think, well, let's go down to Bayview. So you go down to Bayview, again, on a beautiful sunny day. And you pull into the parking lot there where they people park during the summer. And you look at the boat barns. And sunning themselves will be a whole bunch of ring-billed gulls. That's the most common gull here. And they'll be all lined up on the top of those boat barns. And all of a sudden, you'll notice there's some big guys among them because the ring-billed gull is a medium-sized gull. But there'll be some big ones and maybe twice or three times the mass. And you're thinking, that's a big gull. And it is. And it's probably a herring gull because some gull species will come out here and hang out for the winter. I've even seen a California gull, which, according to the bird books, is not supposed to be here in the winter. But that's part of the excitement of birding. You find a bird that's where it's not supposed to be, but there it is. So you have to be familiar with your bird books and, you know, the field marks that you're looking for. So like, for example, with the herring gull, what color are its legs and what color is its eyes? And those things become important in determining the species.
So what do gulls do here in the wintertime? What do they eat? What's their winter, you know, activity?
Well, if they're at Yoke's parking lot.
Eating whatever drops out of your bag.
I think that probably fish. You know, if you've ever been out on the water, you see a dead fish floating along. Well, that's what the gulls will prey on or whatever. But, you know, I can't speak with expertise on that.
Yeah.
But they obviously manage. And, you know, getting back to what you were saying, Barbara, about taking care of the birds for the winter, the fact of the matter is we don't need to. They're perfectly capable of fending for themselves, but it's so fun to feed them and have them come to you and to watch them.
Yeah, that's what's so much fun about it. Well, we're up against a break. We're going to take it right now. When we come back, I want to get more into the food. And one of my questions, everyone, is going to be, like, you read about these birds and it says, well, this bird likes the sunflower seeds and this bird likes the cracked corn. It's like it's like having people into your home for dinner. You have to ask them, you know, what's your favorite food and what do you like? Because they do have their favorite foods, don't they?
They do, and I have a solution.
Okay, excellent. Well, we're going to talk about that right after this.
BF Quick Lube at the top of the South Hill does more than just lubes and oil changes. They do them quick. Just stop by or call and make an appointment at 208-267-7481. Along with regular maintenance, BF Quick Lube can handle most of your other auto repairs. BF Quick Lube would like to take this time to say thank you to each of their customers for putting their trust and support in their services year after year. For a quick lube and oil change and so much more, visit your friends at BF Quick Lube on the South Hill in Bonner's Ferry.
Bonner's Ferry Glass has long been the place to go for a multitude of services, including rock chip repair or windshield replacement and lock and key services. Plus, you'll always find a staff of trained professionals at Bonner's Ferry Glass. If you need commercial and or residential doors, windows, garage doors, screen window and door repair, or even custom glass cutting for tabletops or picture frames, they do it all at Bonner's Ferry Glass on the South Hill in Bonner's Ferry.
Oh, I love family road trips. Wind in my ears. Treats in my mouth. And peace of mind knowing Les Schwab did our tires, brakes, and alignment. Like Les Schwab, my family's safety is my first priority. Well, that and squeaky toys.
Les Schwab Tires, proud to be ranked number one in overall customer satisfaction for aftermarket tire replacement by J.D. Power 2 years in a row. For J.D. Power 2021 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
When we keep Idaho students in classrooms, they have better physical and mental health. Help keep the student you love in school by getting them vaccinated if they're eligible. Make sure they wear a mask, frequently wash their hands, and stay home and get tested when sick. Our teachers and other school staff can also do their part by choosing to vaccinate, wearing a mask, and supporting other preventive measures. For more information on preventive measures, please visit coronavirus.idaho.gov or contact your child's school.
Being a teenager is tough. There's the constant pressure to be liked.
Endless worrying about college.
Cyberbullying, high expectations, all the negativity.
There's no question. Being a teenager is tough. And what do Idaho's teens do when they want to block out the noise and clear their head?
We play! Yeah!
Research shows that teenagers who participate in high school sports have lower stress levels, more confidence, and greater self-esteem. And then there's the biggest benefit of all.
High school sports are fun.
Not just fun.
They're a lot of fun.
Encourage your teenagers to participate in a sport or activity when they go to high school. They'll stress less and smile more. And they'll be laying the foundation for a happier, healthier future.
This message presented by the Idaho High School Activities Association and the Idaho Athletic Administrators Association.
North Idaho's Radio, 97.1 FM and 1450 and 1400 AM.
All right, everyone, here we are. Welcome back in. We're talking today with Mike Turnlin. He is such an expert on birds. It doesn't matter what I throw at him. He is just ready for it. So just now on the break, I was remembering that I have seen flocks of robins, Mike, and they just like come in like 50 of them, and they'll fill up an empty tree in your yard. And I don't know what they're doing there or who they are. How do they spend the winter? Who are these guys?
Yeah. Well, most robins go south for the winter, but not all of them. And some of them will hang out if they have food. So you'll see them in town. And when I used to live in Sandpoint, they were frequent flyers. No, they were frequent feeders at the mountain ash. Over there where I lived, there was a large stand of mountain ash. And they would feed on those berries. But they'll also visit your backyard that have cherries or maybe crab apples and whatnot, or grapes.
Apples. There was a few apples hanging around.
A small population will stay in town. But by and large, the vast majority, I'm guessing, I would say 95, 97% of them leave.
And unlike the robins, at least the ones that I remember that I see in the summertime and the nesting, these winter robins, I mean, they are in a big gang. I mean,
yeah.
They kind of take over the tree.
Birds will flock. And in the off season, in the summer, for example, with our summer breeders, they'll stake out a territory and they'll defend it vigorously. And that's why the males spend so much time singing. He's telling the like species males, stay away. I got claims on this territory. And it's like the swallows fighting over nesting sites. But once the brood is fledged and everybody's ready to start going south, they'll all flock together again.
Yeah.
Because there's security in that. From the raptors.
You said something also I want to pick up on before I forget it, and that is when you were living in town, the birds that you saw there. I read just this morning, Mike, that birds in the wintertime, some birds, come closer to town, closer into residential areas, because I guess they think what they're going to get fed, it's warmer. What's going
they're
on?
They're finding there's feeders, right?
Yeah.
And so... Yeah, it's interesting that I've also observed a lot of the year-round species that we have that are now coming in. When the summer breeders come in, they leave. They go elsewhere because they're not going to compete against them. And of course, that's not true for all of them. But not to get too pedantic and start naming off species, but there is local migration with what are called our year-round residents. They might move up a mountainside, or they might spread out towards the slough, or they might go someplace else, and they won't be at your feeder. But in the winter, they most definitely will be.
Yeah, so they move into town for the winter.
That's where the food is.
Their version of snowbirds.
Yeah, they're locally migrating, I suppose. Yeah.
All right, let's turn you loose with some of the smaller birds that overwinter with us and who they are.
Well, what I have, it depends if you live in town or not. I don't have to deal with house sparrows. House sparrows are a problem. And if you live in town, you're going to have them, and you have to deal with them. And there are ways to get around that, depending on the type of feeder that you use. But where I live out in Sagal, we do not have house sparrows. But some of the common birds that you'll get visiting are chickadees. And we do have three species that tend to come in. We have the black-capped, and that's probably the most familiar one. We have the chestnut-backed, and that's that rusty-colored one. And then if you really keep a sharp eye, you might see a mountain chickadee. Now, the mountain chickadee looks like a black cap with a white racing stripe above its eye, like an eyebrow line. And
I love the way you describe these guys with their racing stripes and their red berets. I just...
And so when we were talking about feeding, what I did was I found the perfect solution. I changed over to what's this wire mesh cylinder bird feeder. And it's a cylinder, and it has two halves. One half is coarse mesh, and the other half is fine mesh. And in the coarse mesh, I put sunflower seeds, just whole. And then in the fine mesh side, I put in a commercial mix of, has millet and cracked corn and Niger seeds and whatnot. And that way, I'm able to attract all the local small species that will come to my backyard. And then to top it off, I have a suet feeder, which is an absolute must for the winter.
Why is a suet feeder so important?
Well, our birds are omnivores, but, you know, they, again, most species will gorge on bugs all summer long. But for some of the larger ones, like our woodpeckers, they're year-round residents, and they're after the whatever, you know, wood-boring beetles, you know, the pupa?
Caterpillar.
That's
the scientific term.
Depends on the size, but you know, because they're like the little downy, which is the smallest one we have, and then we have the next one's the hairy, which and they go around picking through the bark, trying to find dormant bugs or eggs or spiders that are basically in hiding. For the winter, they don't really go to sleep. They go in suspended animation, and they're looking for them. But some of the bigger birds, so like at my suet feeder that I have it absolutely on top of my bird feeding stand so the woodpeckers can get access to it. And they crave the suet because it's pure energy for them. And they're insectivores anyways. And so I get the downy, I get the hairy, I get the northern flicker, I even get the pileated woodpecker. And that's the largest woodpecker in North America, and you can't miss it. It's black.
See the one with the big crown?
The big red pointed cap. Yeah, they're just beautiful. And when one of those show up, the whole bird feeder just sways back and forth. And they go to town on the suet. But what I also found is I attract Steller's jays. And the Steller's jays not only enjoy the suet, but they love the millet. So they will just engorge themselves on the millet mix. So,
you know, I've got a couple of questions on food. I had alluded before we came back into this segment that birds have got their favorite food.
They do.
And they develop these tastes. It's a little bit like inviting your family in, and somebody's gluten free and somebody's vegan, but they'll probably eat what they can get. But like I was just looking down my notes, it says jays love suet and peanuts. Now,
yeah.
I mean peanuts do not naturally grow in North Idaho, so they had to learn to love peanuts because we gave it to them.
Sure, but neither do Niger seeds, right? Oh. You know, and sunflower seeds are introduced too, and corn. But so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to attract, I especially wanted to attract American goldfinch because they're year round. The males look so much different in the winter than they do in the summer, but they like millet and they liked the smaller seeds. So I wanted both. And so the chickadees, And the nuthatches, they love the sunflower seeds. They just go back and forth. But then again, the house finches and the pine siskins and the American goldfinch, and now I discovered the Steller's jay, they love the mix. And the house finches are such sloppy eaters, they truly are. They will sit down and they'll just rummage through the feed, finding what they like and flicking out of the way what they don't like. But what they are doing inadvertently are feeding my juncos.
Yes, those ground
right,
the, ones that
right.
like it a little bit
the,
lower.
The juncos and the song sparrow are hesitant to visit the feeder per se.
They feel safer on the ground.
They like
maybe.
To be on the ground. And
even
so,
though they're birds of flight, they feel safer down in the ground. I find that very interesting.
Well, and that's, again, the niche that they exploit, because you're not going to see that. You generally don't see the nuthatches on the ground. You never see the nuthatches on the ground. You will occasionally see a chickadee on the ground, but you'll always see the junco on the ground on the song sparrow. And in this, and also what I mentioned earlier, the American tree sparrow, and then the common redpole, and the slate-colored juncos, they'll all be on the ground.
Hmm.
So when winter comes and there's snow on the ground and it's maybe crusted over, get out there and give your feeder a shake and get some of that seed on the ground, because then you are going to be helping out those specific species.
Especially, as you say, with the snow kind of crusted over a little bit,
yeah,
and it stays on top.
Right.
What about pine siskins?
Pine siskins will come in a mob, and they're beautiful. They're one of my favorite birds. They're very small, and they're cousins to the American goldfinch. And they like niger seed, and they like millet. So, again, they're one of those ones that'll come visit. They probably come in once a week, and they just come in a mob. There might be 10 to 40 of them, and then they go away, and then they come back. And so I got to make sure I keep my feeder topped off.
These guys that we've been talking, chickadees and the juncos, well, the little guys especially, where do they sleep at night? Where do they go and stay warm at night?
Yeah, the chickadees and the nuthatches, they will actually commune, not together, but with like species. They'll actually will share on an exceptionally cold night. They'll share a woodpecker nest. Mm-hmm. They'll all just kind of tumble on in there and keep each other warm. Some of them have the ability of lowering their body temperature to adjust to the cold. They're remarkably hardy. And we're not even talking about things that don't come to your feeder, like brown creepers and Pacific wren, which are just little tiny guys. But they survive these cold winters remarkably. They're well adapted.
They don't need us or want us.
They won't come to your feeder. They might scold you when you go by. At least the wren will.
We're up against another break, and when we come back, one of the things, and we've got so many more things, we could go for another 2 hours. Wouldn't that be sweet? Anyway, I want to talk about what we don't want to do, to how we might be interfering with them in a loving way. We want to do things, but we're really not helping them at all. So, and we've got other questions too, so take a break. We'll be right back.
Have you visited Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet lately? They have preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, emergency rations, food storage supplies, and they now stock ammo and knives as well. Of course, Grünberg Schloss carries U.S. and world coins and paper money, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5 on Triangle Drive just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Call 208-263-6060. Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet, 263-6060.
The holidays aren't about what you receive. It's about the good you give. P1 FCU is asking you to join us in spreading a whole lot of joy this holiday season. Visit p1fcu.org/season or our Facebook page to nominate a family who could benefit from a special turkey dinner with all the trimmings. Want to do even more good? Stop by any P1 FCU branch to drop off food, toy, and coat donations until December 17th. Join us in giving back during our season of giving.
Okay, joining us today on the podcast is Stan and Roy, collectively known as the Raptors from Triple Play. Guys, here's a question. I've heard the Raptor Reef Water Park is always exactly 86 degrees. Why is this?
Well, Madeline, rigorous studies showed us that 86 degrees is the ideal temperature for fun to grow and flourish.
Oh, Stan.
So are you saying the water park would be less fun if it was 85 or 87 degrees?
I think that might possibly be exactly what I'm saying.
Could we make that not what he's saying?
The Raptors are brought to you by Triple Play, where you can bowl, play laser tag, climb a ropes course, and splash around in Raptor Reef Indoor Water Park. Plus, it's all attached to a cozy hotel. Visit 3play.com.
At 88 degrees, fun really dissipates, and we want to avoid that.
Okay, Stan, what is that based on?
Instinct, Roy. Distinct instinct.
Oh.
Have you heard the legend of the beast? It's a tale that's been told in these parts for generations. They say the beast stalks the local woods and roads. A rugged, fearless animal who feeds on wet pavement, thick mud, and fresh snow. It's quick as a bird, but strong as a bull. An alpha predator with a roar that can rip concrete. And steely teeth that gnash through even the thickest of brush. The beast isn't scared. It doesn't have to be. It owns these parts. But there's still a chance it can be tamed. by the right hero. Whether you're looking for the ultimate tool on the worksite or just a wreck vehicle fit for a weekend warrior, Ford F-150 is your best choice for work or play. Visit your local Northwest Ford dealer or buyfordnow.com to see why the new Northwest Edition F-150 is creating a beastly legend all its own.
KBFI, KSPT, North Idaho's radio.
All right, here we go again, our last segment. We are with Mike Turnlin today. He, by his own words, he's a bird nerd. He is a lot more than that. He is an expert on birds and has got so much information, and we appreciate his sharing some of it with us. So, well, what should we not be doing? I mean, you know, sometimes we can, like, over-love. how do we stop not hurting them?
Well, a couple of things that are important, I think, are placement of the bird feeder. An open area is best because if you have cats, that gives the ground birds a chance to scatter. There are a lot of people who are opposed to letting their cats outside. I'm not one of them, but I want to have a fair playing field. So I have my bird feeder set up so that the juncos and what have you are on the ground, are fully aware of any cat in the proximity. They can take care of themselves. So just give them, you know, make sure that you place the bird feeder in a place that's open.
So they can see a predator, exactly. Like your cat.
Right.
Coming. And, then
and you'd be amazed at how intimidated they are not. They, you know, they're wild animals and they know how to take care of themselves. But you gotta, you know, give them a chance. Another thing is maybe keep it away from windows. Don't place it too close to your house. I would rather have a bird feeder set further back and have to use binoculars than have it closer and not use binoculars, because they will run into your windows, mm-hmm. especially if a big flock of, like, pine siskins are notorious for this. A whole flock comes in and they all start mobbing your feeder and they're going off every which way, and then they start running into your windows and they frequently break their necks that way.
Yeah, we have big windows, big view windows, and it reflects blue sky and sun,
right.
And tree, and it looks, even to our eyes sometimes, just like,
yeah.
You could walk right into,
right,
it.
Right,
they
into
fly
it.
Right,
yeah.
Into it.
And another thing is, and it's not so much a problem when it really gets cold, but I have found that it's good to make sure the food is fresh, and especially if you have a little trough, go out there and take maybe a butter knife with you or something and clean out the old food. The birds are kind of dirty, especially the house finches. They'll sit there and eat and do their business. So clean it all out and keep everything fresh and tidy. And that's a good strategy, I think.
What about suet? Does suet stay pretty good, or if it gets in sunshine or a warmer day?
Well, they formulate it to take the sun. I've never, ever had problem with suet. And to be honest with you, it doesn't last long enough for it to go bad.
Yeah.
Even in the summer, birds, they thrive on it.
They love it. Like
they
you
do.
Say, instant energy. It's good for them.
It's good for them.
Yeah, when it's made correctly.
Yes, and they love it. And if I didn't have suet, I don't know, I wouldn't have any of those beautiful woodpeckers come into my house. Why would they?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And of course,
and
the
don't make that tap tap bang and stuff like they do in the spring, because
no.
That's their mating call. That's
right,
their attacking.
Right.
They're doing their dance for their woman.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And also the especially the sapsuckers, and they're the funnest. But of course, they're not here now.
Yeah,
they're summer breeders. But when they show up in the springtime, that's always a
thrill. Mike, what about water birds?
Yeah, you know, and we should have mentioned that probably earlier, because a lot of birds will come down here for the winter. Lake Pendere is a wonderful place for them to overwinter. And we were talking about driving through Sully Valley looking for northern shrikes and rough-legged hawks. Continue on down to Sunnyside Road and go to Hawkins Point. And again, probably having to stay from your car using your binoculars. glance at the rafts of the birds. The birds will stay in rafts, which is like a flock of water birds all floating together because there's protection there. And it can be mixed species. And a couple of years back, I went out with my son and his wife, and we were out birding, and my goodness, there were redneck grebes. And they're not commonly seen here, but again, that's one of the great joys of birding. You find birds that you don't, you know, intend to see. And sometimes they're quite a puzzle. What is that? And so you have to have a really good quality bird book. And I always recommend Sibley's Guide to Birds, because they'll walk you through step by step those field marks that you have to look for in order to get a positive ID. And a field mark per se is a marking on a bird that is definitive for that species, like I was talking about with American tree sparrow, with the crest, the rusty colored cap, and then the spot on their bare breast. Beautiful little birds.
You know, one area that we haven't talked about, and really I thought of it because you mentioned the birds rafting up on, you know, a safe area in Lake Ponderay. We've got many year-round streams and ponds. Do we need to provide water for birds in the winter, or be concerned about ice?
Yeah, that's a good question. What I've observed is that the birds will eat the snow.
Hmm.
They just eat the snow.
That's
and,
interesting.
I've seen them do that.
Yeah.
They just scrape the snow. And I, to be honest with you, I never really thought about that. I figured there must have been, you know, I'm sure that they can find open water and go.
Right.
And because they can take care of themselves. But I noticed that my chickens eat snow.
Hmm.
And I see these little scrape marks, and I watch them. They go along, and they'll just start scraping up beaks of snow, even though I provide them with water all the time. And by golly, I've watched, what was it? It was a junco eating snow. So I guess that's what they might do.
Maybe it's more important in the summer, because I know that when I was living in Hope, we had a fountain, and it was kind of a rough, rustic-looking thing. But there would be hummingbirds that would take baths in there, the robins. A lot of the birds would come up, and they would stay, and they would sip a little, and they'd look around, and the sound of the water and the coolness of the water. I mean, they were obviously enjoying it, as long as I stayed away.
Well, I have you know, water out for the birds, and I have a large porcelain bowl with a rock in the middle, and then I fill it with water, and you have to keep it clean because birds
yes.
are not clean, you know, in the sense that, you know, you keep it sanitary. But just even a week and a half ago, I watched a house finch take a bath.
Yes.
And it was cold out, but it wasn't freezing, and it was taking a bath. So
I wonder if they do bathe in the wintertime. You saw one bathing.
I guess so. The water was standing there, and it wasn't freezing out, and the bird was looking around and then started to take a bath.
I guess so.
I don't know. They're fascinating animals, and if we don't feed them, they don't die. They just go somewhere else. They can take care of themselves.
But if you want to see them and you want to, you know, enjoy them, we were talking earlier saying, I have never seen an unhappy bird. They make me happy.
Yeah.
I have birdhouses kind of inside my house,
yeah.
you know, just kind of decoration and little bird things. But they are happy creatures, and they sing, and we love to hear them sing and make noise. And even when they do a few things like that might, quote unquote, low-level irritate us, like that woodpecker that you know attacked my stucco house with a vengeance.
Yeah.
I'd go out and clap my hands, and he would go away. But you know, they're beautiful, aren't they?
They are, and I don't know why I find them so fascinating. I have been since probably 8 or 9 years old. I have been just following birds, and even this morning I was watching the chickadees and the nuthatches. And they're an endless source of fascination.
That's true. Well, you are an endless source of fascination to us. I cannot tell you how much we appreciate your knowledge and your help and all the information that you share with us. Mike Turnlin, you are a blessing. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara, for the opportunity.
All right. That's it for today. An archived recording of this program and all my Tuesday programs and all the noon hour programs are available to you at NorthIdahoRadio.com. What a great crew of hosts we have here for the afternoon noon hour programming. Next week, I get to meet and talk with a new person for me. We have met on the phone, but not in person. She is Cheryl McCarty, and she is with the Bonner Partners in Care Clinic. This is a wonderful medical service right here in Sandpoint. Until then, this is Barbara saying take care, and may God bless you.